We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, welcome to the Riverfront Bengals Show, episode 33. We are still on the air. I don't know why, but I'm still having a lot of fun. We are the seventh most popular Bengals-centric podcast in the beautiful town of Huntington, West Virginia, home of the Marshall Thundering Herd. Sure, why not?
Marshall Thundering Herd.
Randy Moss University.
That's right.
I am your host, Joe Farsing. Alongside me is my good friend and hopefully yours, Greg Niemann. Greg, how are you this week, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are you?
We're hanging in there. We got baseball season starting. We're busy between that and my little girl's softball and everything. We're barely home, so.
Sometimes busy is a good thing.
Yeah, it's that time. Time goes by super crazy fast. So, before we get started, just a little bit of business to take care of. If you guys like us, if you are on YouTube, hit subscribe, click like. Follow us with on the Riverfront YouTube channel with shows that such as the OG Riverfront with Chad and Nate, Late Night Reds with Tim Daniel. We had a lot of fun. Always putting out a lot of good promo. I know Tim is teasing a cool guest for his show coming up here on Sunday. I know nothing about it, so I'm going to be surprised as the rest of you guys, but stay tuned. We got a lot of stuff coming out here on the channel, so. If you're listening to us on anywhere you find us on podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever, subscribe, give us 5-star rating. If you don't like us, shut your mouth. Right?
Let's go. Yep.
a little bit of Bengals news and notes this week before we get into the meat of the topic. Extension news, we are still waiting on word of anybody getting extended, whether it be T, Joe Burrow, or Logan Wilson. There's a lot of rumblings and grumblings last week that T's deal is done, that it's at least agreed to. The numbers are taken care of, but they've yet to put pen to paper. He wasn't there. They've got their first Bengals have their first voluntary mini camp running right now. He didn't show because why would he? You know, you don't want to get hurt in something stupid before you sign your big contract. Logan Wilson is around. It's good to see he's there. But again, I expect at least T's and definitely Burrows to get done sooner than later. But no news is not bad news. It's just no news. I mean, it's going to happen. But next little bit, Drew Sample, our good old buddy, the fantastic use of a second round pick for a blocking only tight end.
Yes.
Apparently, the grass wasn't greener elsewhere. He re-signed with the Bengals. I know he had visits with the Cardinals and a couple other spots. I'm glad that he's back. He's someone – there's not a lot of depth in the tight end room. He knows the system. He's been around 4 years. He's a good blocker. He filled in admirably in 2020 when Uzomah was hurt. He's not a huge weapon. He's not dynamic. But he's someone – you know, he's – if you have to throw it to him, I mean, he's a good good valve. He's not going to make people miss, but he's reliable and just someone who's depth in the room. I think it's a fine move. So what do you think?
I'm totally fine with the move now that I think with him, basically the Bengals basically walking away from him, bringing him back now, it's a little different optically because he's no longer that second round pick that was wasted to me. Yeah. Now it's a different feel. It's just picking up depth for the tight end room. And there's no expectation level that comes with Drew Sample coming back, in my opinion, for Bengals fans. I don't think we expect the world from Drew Sample. And when you draft a tight end in the second round, you expect certain things to happen. So from being removed from that second round kind of hype, I think, you know, bringing Drew Sample in, I don't have any issues with it. And I think the expectations for what he's going to do, I think he can succeed in this kind of role. I think it's just unfortunate he got drafted in the second round, and that's not his fault. It just happened that way. So I like the Bengals bringing him back. I you don't hear bad things about him other than that they drafted him in the second round. You know, other than that, I don't have a problem with him coming back and being part of the fold, team guy. And like you said, I think the real key to it is the tight end room is almost empty. I mean, Herb Smith Jr. And then you're kind of picking at scraps. So why not add a little depth of a guy that's familiar with the system, easy fit, and should make the transition a little bit easier. You would think for Herb Smith Jr. that Drew Sample can kind of help him out a little bit with knowing all the lingo and knowing everything that he needs to know coming into this year.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't remember the exact numbers of his deal, but he's going to be making pretty much a vet minimum. Mm-hmm. And to have that guy who's, again, this is going year five going into the system, he knows what his role is. It kind of telegraphs things when he's coming into the game that they're probably going to run the ball, but Bengals haven't been afraid of telegraphing in the past.
Right.
Basically, anytime they're under center, there's a pretty good chance they're going to run the ball. So it's, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, totally.
And it doesn't preclude them from drafting the tight end. It mm-hmm. gives them a little bit of flexibility that, again, since they have him back and they have Irv Smith, they don't have to push the guy. If it's someone who, you know, if it's someone who might not be ready day one, needs a little time and to kind of work their way into the role, perfect. They've got guys who've been there and know what they're doing. So,
totally agree.
Yeah. A little bit of news that's come out in the past couple of days about our good friend Joe Mixon. Since we last recorded, he was formally recharged with aggravated menacing coming from the January incident where he was charged and then charges were dropped. They did refile charges. He pled not guilty. I believe today was when he was in court for that. I don't really have anything much to say on that. He's expected to be asked to take a pay cut. This is coming from Paul Daner Jr. at The Athletic. Basically, it's take a pay cut or you're going to be released. I'm not sure what his value is on the open market. Do you think that, and you have to figure his he's making 12. They're probably going to ask him to come down to 5, which is, I think, what the difference between his what the cap hit would be. Do you think he'd make more than 5 on the open market, or is 5 probably about as good as he's going to get?
I see almost zero chance he makes more than 5 on the open market. You see what's going on with Zeke, and I think Zeke and Mixon right now are pretty comparable backs for at this point in their career. Yeah. A lot of tread on the tires, both trending downwards. Yeah. Don't know that you want to hand them the ball a bunch of times. So for me, I and for Mixon, with this charge being refiled, I think if he would turn down that $5 million, that would be a little shocking to me. I mean, I just don't know what else, where the grass is going to be greener for him. And I think there's still a lot of options out there for the Bengals that they can easily walk away from Mixon and feel just fine about their options and whether that's the draft or a free agents that are still available. And yeah. I think they can walk away with no regrets pretty quickly.
Yeah. I mean, they have a lot of leverage in this even without the legal issues that he's got over his head. And it's a misdemeanor charge, but it's still, it's a bad look for someone who has his history. That was 8 years ago. I mean, it's been a while, but I mean, he still has that history and he's not going to make that money on the, I do agree with you, he's not going to make that money on the open market. Dalvin Cook is probably going to be released if he's at this point, a more viable more viable running back with similar situation. I mean, a guy who's just his cap hits getting too big and he's got a lot of tread, or, you know, got a lot of wear on the tire, but he also doesn't have the baggage that Mixon has. So it's, yeah, I would expect him to probably accept the pay cut. Again, I've been on board for a while that I'd just rather him just cut. They just use that money. That's more money to front load to T and Joe Burrow, and his production can be replaced.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been banging that drum. That's, you don't give running back second contracts. I'm sorry. You just don't. But.
No. And there's so many running backs available. I mean, you just start to look at the board, you go Zeke, Eckler, Dalvin Cook. I mean, there are so many options, and we haven't even talked about the draft yet, where you can always pick up starters in the third, fourth, fifth, sixth. Nothing right now is in Joe Mixon's advantage. And I know we said his issues were 8 years ago, but certain issues follow you forever. And he's got those. So you have to walk on eggshells. I know it's just a misdemeanor, and that's great. But when you have those kind of issues that follow you forever, you don't have a whole lot of leverage in the situation, because there's just not many people that are going to listen to you.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, he's probably looking for maybe he'd get $2 million or something from some team that just needs a fill in or a bridge to a running back that they're going to draft. So,
yeah.
But again, this is something that I would expect this get taken care of before the draft. I mean, within the next week, they need to know what they're going to do. You know, how running back's going to fall on their actual, you know, list of priorities. So it's a need for sure, but it's, you know, where it is compared, you know, whether you've got your quote, you know, starter still with you or not. So
yeah, because I think
that, let's go ahead.
I think this move with the Mixon deal, I mean, that could change your priority of running back from maybe your fifth positional target to priority number two, maybe three or two. So getting that resolved, I mean, does change a lot of what the draft looks like for me for the Bengals.
Yeah, it becomes more like, it's, do you end up having to reach for somebody, you know, if you're in the second round and, you know, do you end up having to reach for a guy that, you know, you'd rather wait until the third round, but you want to make sure you get a guy that fits the profile of what you need. So, something definitely will get squared away in, you know, within the next week or so. I'm expecting a lot of Bengals news to drop in the next week. So,
yes, we're ready for it too. We're ready for the Bengals news.
Yeah, it's been a little slow. We're arguing about chili on the interwebs right now. We'll get to that later, though. Outside of that, I mean, that's pretty much all the news that there's been in the past couple weeks. Bengals wise, league wise, did you hear Jalen Hurts got paid?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
What are your thoughts on that deal compared to, you know, at least as it relates to Burrow and his. In his upcoming contract extension.
Well, I think a lot of people are saying that the Eagles maybe moved too quickly, and you hear all these analysts on ESPN that I would have liked to have seen one more good year from Hurts before you give him this deal. But I totally disagree. I think that the organizations that move the quickest are going to save the most money. Jalen Hurts, bam, highest paid contract. Joe, whoever signs next out of Herbert, they're going to be the next highest paid guy. So you want to be in the front of that line, and you're going to be able to save, it might not be hundreds of millions, but 10, 20, 30, 40 million. Cause the next guy is going to continue to be the highest paid guy. Yeah. I'm always scared when Daniel Jones is making 40 million, like, let's get Burrow paid now before this just gets insane. Cause Daniel Jones is going to make $40 million this year. If somebody argued to me Joe Burrow is twice as good, you got it. I mean, I'm not mad at you for saying that. So I think what this tells me is Bengals, let's get on it. The earlier we sign Burrow, the better off we are just from the upcoming numbers of whoever gets signed afterwards. I just think it's a race now. You've got to get this done as quick as possible.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. This is kind of just sets the floor of the, this is where you start from, and obviously, yeah, it's going to go from there. I'm a little surprised that the years, it's only 5 years. For these quarterback contracts, the years really don't matter, except in terms of actual accounting and moving money around for the cap, because most of them end up will restructure their deal you know, move signing bonus to sell, you know, things like that, just to do some maneuvering under the cap. So it's surprising because, again, most of these guys are signing 8, 9, 10 year deals and his is only 5, but good for him. I think this is a good good point for Lamar Jackson to actually look for. And this is probably more in line with where he is. He's not going to get he's not going to get a deal as big as Joe Burrow or even Justin Herbert, even though I'd probably take Lamar over Justin Herbert myself. But it'll be interesting to see where, you know, where we go from here for the next couple guys. Cause yeah, there are 3 more guys that are waiting for their deals. I don't think Tua is not getting, I don't think there's any chance on God's green earth Tua gets extended this year. Just came out apparently that he was legitimately seriously contemplating retiring just after the season because of the concussions. And I get it. I mean, he, how awful those injuries, the that, you know, that he had in back-to-back weeks. I mean, that's crazy. And then I, you know, you hope he's legitimately in good shape. The problem with concussions is the more you have them, the more likely you are to have them. So that's, you know, never mind contract and things of that nature, just for the, you know, just for the guy's health. I mean, he's 23 years old or, you know, in that vicinity. So,
yeah. And for Tua, I mean, I totally agree with everything you said, and I feel horrible for Tua, and I wish he could just have had a healthy career. I wish that for every player. I never want to see a situation like this. But as you get older, and I got plenty of gray hair here to tell you I'm getting older, but, you know, as you get older, you do start to look a little bit farther down the line. What am I going to do next? When you're 21 or 22, if you would have told me, hey, you're going to retire because of a concussion, I absolutely would have said, no, I'll play forever. But then as you get a little bit older, your mentality changes. So good for him, whatever he decides. And I hope it's the best decision for him. Because I just feel bad for him, for his career to be altered by injuries. But unfortunately, life's not fair. And that is how it happens. And watching some of those concussions on hits that weren't necessarily what you would see as egregious or didn't look to be malicious in any way. They were very, what I would say, commonplace hits. It scares me for him. Now it's his body. It's his, you know, career. He can decide whatever he wants, but those hits were scary to watch. One other thing I wanted to touch on is for Jalen Hurts. And this is really just hopefully for our younger audience. Jalen Hurts just signed a 5-year, $255 million deal. And whatever it was, what, 6 years ago, he got benched for Tua at Alabama and then stayed there and was going to be the backup and then eventually transferred to Oklahoma. You just have to give Tua or Jalen Hurts a mound of credit, a world of credit. How many guys would not face adversity the way he did? And now he's signing a contract that makes him the highest paid player in the history of the richest league in all of sports. So congratulations to Jalen Hurts. Kids, when you get benched, when something bad happens, respond positively, and you never know what will happen. I just think that's a phenomenal story, and I'm super happy for Jalen Hurts, you know, answering the bell when it wasn't always the easiest time to do so.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you've got kind of 3 ways to go when something like that happens. You can either pack it in and say, well, you know, I've been replaced. This is my lot in life. It's put your head down and work and try to be the best backup quarterback that you can be, or do what he did and have the confidence and the belief in himself. And no, I'm capable of doing this. He was better than me at this job. I'm going to work my ass off this much harder and, you know, make myself the best player I can be. $179 million guaranteed. I mean, that's, you know,
you can get a couple cars. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, I mean, he busted his ass off and, you know, he earned every penny of that. All these players earn every penny of their contract. That's the thing that makes me cringe when these are signed, that, you know, people say, oh, they're overpaid. You know, they're like, no, they've earned every penny of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But on to the next item when talking about, you know, guys aren't overpaid. Odell Beckham Jr. to the Ravens. $15 million guaranteed for 1 year, up to $18 million with incentives and escalators. And if, you know, if he hits all these markers, I just said nobody's overpaid, but how bad did the Ravens overpay to prove to Lamar that they're serious about giving him weapons?
I mean, this, I, when I saw this, and this is legitimately first reaction that I had when I saw this, you know, days ago, when it popped up on my phone, I thought it was a joke.
Yeah.
I literally thought it was a joke. I'm like, they did not pay OBJ $15 million. Forget the incentives up to 18. I saw 15 and I was like, well, that's not real. And then you just kept diving in deeper and deeper. And you're like, I'm pretty sure this is real. It was, I'm at a total loss for words that you're in a contract dispute with your franchise quarterback. I'm assuming it's their franchise quarterback. The way they've handled it, you just don't really know. But you're in a contract dispute with your franchise quarterback about guaranteed money and overall money and yada, yada, yada. And you're going to dish out $15 million to a guy with two ACL injuries that when he was with the Rams, I, off the top of my head, I want to say it was like 6-something receiving. I mean, 600 yards. I just, yeah. It's mind-blowing to me. I mean, literally, it's crazy.
It's, yeah, I mean, two ACL injuries, like you said. He's 31 years old. He said his production has declined just year over year and didn't play at all last year because he wasn't cleared. It's not that he just sat out the year because he just didn't get a deal that he liked. He couldn't pass physicals. He wasn't able to play last year. And this was an injury in, you know, January of 22, you know, when, you know, or February in the Super Bowl is when he blew his knee out. But, you know, he wasn't ready to go at all this year. Obviously, he, you know, he's had to pass a physical to sign the, you know, for the agreement for them to sign the deal. But it's when they, you know, it had been reported that $15 million a year was his asking price. And my thought was, sweet, you know, that's good luck on you. You know, let's start high and, you know, we'll see you somewhere in the middle, probably 7, 8, 9 million, something like that. Cool. No, someone actually get, you know, and a contending team that it's weird. I still think he's going to be a decent wide receiver. I mean, he has a world of talent. He's not a wide receiver one. He's maybe a wide receiver two, wide receiver three. They don't even have a wide receiver one. They've got a tight end one, but it, you know, good luck to him. I don't know who's going to be throwing him the ball. I'm guessing it's their Pro Bowl quarterback, Snoop Huntley.
Yeah, I guess the question I would have for Bengals fans, and if you could take your hat off as a Bengals fan and just be totally reasonable, and I think it's a really fair question. Who would you rather have, OBJ right now or Tyler Boyd? I mean, I think I would probably lean Tyler Boyd. Regardless, I think it's a fair question, and OBJ just got $15 million. It really was just – I think it's insane. I think it's crazy, and I'm happy the Ravens did it. More power to them.
Yeah, it's OBJ has a higher ceiling. Like, even at his age, he definitely has a higher ceiling than Tyler Boyd, but he's a couple years older. He has the knee injuries. Boyd has had a relatively clean clean sheet injury wise. You have to figure the cost difference. Tyler Boyd's making, I forget the exact number, but he's making probably about half of what OBJ is making this year. They're both on, you know, basically on 1 year deals right now. This is the last year of Boyd's deal. You can pay that extra money to OBJ and hope that he approaches where he's been, or you can assume that Tyler Boyd's going to be the guy that he's been year after year after year and be the, you know, the one of the top five, you know, slot receivers in the league.
Yeah.
It's, you know, interesting how others would answer that question. I think, again, because we're Bengals fans and we have wide receiver one, wide receiver two, it, you know, it's hard to, you know, great, you know, OBJ would still be the third best receiver on the Bengals, you know, even him, you know, regardless whether you have him or Boyd, but interesting question.
Yeah.
Last bit of news here, and it's some awesome news. DeMar Hamlin, fully, completely, 100% cleared to resume football activities. I have no notes. Literally, it says fucking awesome news. It's, you know, everyone who watched what happened in January just was absolutely just terrified, you know, terrifying scene, that he's able to resume full, you know, full football activity. That's great. Like, that there's, you know, no sarcasm, and I'm a bitterly cynical asshole, and I got nothing on this. That's just great.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, I've never been a part of a football game where at one point the football game meant absolutely nothing to me at all. I didn't care if the Bengals, you know, a lot of people got mad about the, not, you know, basically the way the playoff situation worked out. I never cared at all. There's, you know, life is so much bigger than football. We all love football, obviously. You know, coaching high school football, watching the NFL, watching college, being a draft junkie. You know, I'm all about football all the time. But that is a moment I will never forget. I mean, it was the first time in my life that a football game to me became absolutely meaningless. And this news right here is, it's incredible. I was surprised when I read it. And just super happy that that is the case. That's another, everything you hear about DeMar Hamlin is, you know, how he had to work super hard, wasn't a high round draft pick, really had to bust his butt to get this stuff done. And then it all gets taken away. Super happy for him. He's obviously super resilient, and I think that's phenomenal. And if you can't cheer for this one, you know, you got your own set of issues, because this is amazing. This is incredible. And I hope everybody shares my enjoyment on this guy being fully recovered and cleared for football activity. It's just amazing.
Absolutely. I'm excited to see his reception when he comes back. Bills play back at Paycor this year. I forget when. Schedule isn't released yet, so never mind. But yeah, I'm sure he'll get a very nice, very nice reception from our home fans at Paycor. So, again, ball out, get your spot back, man. Go do your thing, buddy.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, so that wraps up pretty much all of the news over the past couple weeks. There are probably some minor things that I don't care about, so I'm not going to waste your time, my time, or Greg's time on it. On to the topic of the week. It is mock draft time. NFL draft is next Thursday, a week from when this episode is released, in Kansas City or whatever.
Yeah, it's just a draft. We don't know where it's at.
It'll make its way to Cincinnati at some point, and it'll be the biggest fucking party the city has ever seen.
Oh, it'll be nuts.
After the Super Bowl title, or after the Super Bowl parade that's going to happen this year, of course.
Bingo.
I would say World Series, but Reds aren't winning the World Series anytime before that.
We'll wait on that.
I'm not holding my breath.
I don't have any predictions for World Series wins anytime soon, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great future bet. You know, if you have something, you know, put futures down at see, you know, what it is for 2025, what, you know, what the return is on that. But I wouldn't put more than $20 down.
No, be very careful. Tread carefully with those futures on the Reds.
Yeah. What are your general thoughts on the draft? I know you're a bit more into the draft than I am. How does this draft kind of feel compared to just generally? You don't need to compare every position by position, but compared to last handful of draft years.
I think this is a pretty talented draft. I really do. I think there's going to be big time winners, and I think you'll see big time losers as well. I think there's guys you can miss on. There's guys that are evaluated a little bit higher than I see it. And I think that they could have more negatives than they're actually giving them credit for, or not really credit, but however you want to say it. But I do think there's a lot of position groups that are fairly deep that if you maneuver around the draft in the correct way, when and where you take guys, I feel like there's teams that could fill 3, 4, 5, you know, holes with starter caliber guys or a backup guy that you can feel super comfortable about. So I think this draft is a very, I would describe it as a very solid overall draft is the way I would describe it.
It seems a little less top heavy. Yes. I don't think you have a can't miss guy that's, you know, maybe Will Anderson, but, you know, I mean, there's no absolute can't miss quarterback. I mean, there are some good quarterbacks, but there's questions either about consistency, actual production, or, you know, physical attributes that Bryce Young can't do anything about being 4'2".
Right.
But, you know, there's no Joe Burrow, there's no Trevor Lawrence, who's that absolute, you know, can't miss number one guy. There's at least legitimate first round quarterbacks, unlike last year when there was one, and outside of Pittsburgh, you're not going to find a lot of people that agree that Kenny Pickett wasn't a reach. And he might turn out to be a decent quarterback. I mean, he second half of the season, he was pretty solid. He came on, and he doesn't have the ceiling that a lot of these guys have. But again, that's normal years. That guy's not getting picked in the first round. He's second round, you know, mid second, you know, possibly even top of the third. How do you think the quarterback's going to shake out? Or at least what do you think the handful of teams that need a quarterback outside of the, you know, the Panthers? I think Young is pretty set in stone to go to the Panthers, it seems now. But what about Richardson? What about Levis? What about Hendon Hooker, who's like 75 years old but blew up? You know, C.J. Stroud. Where do you think what's happening with these guys?
I'm just going to lean to what I think is the safest bet you'll ever make, and that is when you go to the draft, quarterbacks are going to be taken early and often. And I think you're going to see that run happen, especially for the reasons you just pointed out. From last year's draft, we had one first-round quarterback.
Yeah.
So that means essentially in the last 23 months, you've brought in one quarterback to the NFL that was a first-rounder. I think you have teams that are super hungry for quarterback, and I think I've seen some mock drafts with guys falling to, you know, Levis falling to 13, into 15. I don't see any way any of that happens. I think that there's going to be a run on quarterbacks, and I wouldn't be surprised to see five of them go in the top 10. I mean, it wouldn't. I really think there's going to be a massive run on quarterbacks because you're going to see people that are hungry. And then the other part of that is that the best part of this draft to me, early on at least, is in that 15 to 30 range. I think you can get very similar guys to what you're going to get 5 through 15 if you're not drafting quarterback.
Yeah.
So to me, you know, where the Bengals sit is a pretty advantageous spot. And I think you just almost have to see those quarterbacks run off the board, because if you draft Will Anderson or some of these guys that are top 10 non-quarterbacks, I feel like you're reaching just a little bit for some of them in those spots, and you can get a very similar player at, say, 13, you know, 14, 15, and so on. I just feel like the worst spot to be in is almost in that top 10, but you don't need a quarterback. So I just think a lot of these teams are going to be able to trade up without having to pay a super premium. And I think they will move up because those teams will kind of be very happy to drop back and pick up a similar player 7, 8, 9, 10 picks later.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what Chicago did. It wouldn't be unquestioned that they would have looked at getting a quarterback. I don't know what Justin Fields is ultimately going to be. I mean, he's dynamic, hasn't shown a ton in terms of actual quarterbacking acuity, but they're sticking with him. But I mean, they traded back from 1 to 9 and, you know, got a nice haul of picks to go with it. There has been a lot of grumblings about the Texans maybe passing on a quarterback. Do you think that'll happen, or do you make it sound like you seem to think that that they're going to pick a quarterback because they need a quarterback?
If the Texans don't pick a quarterback, I think it would be them trading out to pick up that additional value. I know, their head coach they just hired is a defensive guy, obviously. Yeah. But when you're starting a franchise, and basically that is what Houston is doing right now, you're basically starting a franchise. I mean, they're starting from scratch, essentially. You almost have to start quarterback. I mean, if they draft Will Anderson Jr. at 2, I would be stunned. I just don't know how a fan base would react to that with the quarterback draft you have in front of you, that, you know, by all measures is very top heavy quarterback wise. If you pass on a quarterback there, I think mayhem could unleash in Houston. I mean, if I'm a fan and you pass up watching the Houston Texans offense the last couple of years, and you pass up on a quarterback to draft defense, it would be really hard for me to pay for a ticket in Houston after watching the offense that I've watched them with the last couple of years. And then you bypass a quarterback. I think it creates a lot of issues for Houston if they don't go quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't the last time I could think of something similar when a team needed a quarterback at the top of the draft, didn't draft one, was actually the Bengals in 2011. But a little bit different situation because after Cam Newton, the rest of the quarterbacks in the first round were there were a few that went. Jake Locker went 8th, Blaine Gabbert 10th, Christian Ponder 12th. Anyone else in the first round? I'm scanning real quick. That was all the first round. That was a very wise decision by the Bengals to get AJ Green and then, you know, get Andy Dalton, who he's outperformed all of them. I think Cam has an MVP, but I think Dalton's had a more successful career. He still has a job, you know, this far down the road. I think it's probably smoke screens, agents and front office people just throwing stuff out. They're trying to see if they can gin up some more support for someone to trade up and then, you know, get another quarterback in the back half of the top 10. But
yes. Yeah, I completely agree. I think they're using it as a show to maybe build up the value if they do decide to trade, you know, because if they get something that is similar to the Bears, what the Bears got, I think Houston would be happy to take that. But I think that's a stretch to get that kind of haul back. I thought the Bears did a great job. If Houston gets a haul back similar to that, I think they would pull the trigger in a heartbeat. But that's what I think they're trying to drum up is getting that kind of deal. But I just don't see that happening. So I think then they ultimately stick it to go ahead and draft the quarterback and move on.
The only place I could see that happening is with the Raiders. They are at 7. They don't really have a quarterback. They got Jimmy G.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the ultimate placeholder. But like I said, they really don't have a long-term quarterback. Falcons are a possibility. I think they'd be wise to give Ritter. Full disclosure, I'm a Desmond Ritter homer. I'm a Bengals or a Bearcats season ticket holder. I thought he looked, you know, when he got his feet kind of settled underneath him, I think he showed some stuff that showed, you know, he's got a future in the league. Is he a top end quarterback? I don't think so, but I think he bought a year from the Falcons. If he has a poor year, then they're in position to, you know, to draft another quarterback next year, and you know, then nothing really hurt outside of, you know, you spend a year on a good defensive pick or whoever, you know, why, whatever they decide to do, but outside chance at the end of the day would trade up.
The only part that scares me about the, I would like to see, I'm with you. I would like to see Desmond Ritter get a full year of, here you go. Let's see what you got. Not a whole lot of pressure. You know, see if you can grow into this role. I think he for the most part earned that in the last couple games. The part that scares me is you look at all the signings the Falcons made. I don't know that their ownership group is going to be okay with just chalking it up to Desmond Ritter if they have a chance to draft one of those elite quarterbacks, because they did make a flurry of signings.
They've had a good, especially on defense. They put in brought in for the secondary, Jesse Bates. They traded for Jeff Okuda, who's been, you know, been of a disappointment, as it were, for where he was drafted, but the guy has a ton of talent. He's still on his, you know, still on a rookie deal, so he's not making a ton of money. Like, that's, they brought in a lot of guys. Calais Campbell,
You are correct.
Yeah, I was going to say that they brought in an older edge rusher. I thought it was Campbell.
I looked at their list of signings the other day. It was amazing. I mean, they have
a lot.
Two handfuls of guys that are really useful players that they threw money at. So do they charge forward? Like, hey, let's go get it done right now. But I would like to see Desmond Ritter get another shot. I just don't know if it'll happen. But I hope for his sake, I hope it does. But I don't know that it will.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, they only invested a third rounder in him, and we've seen how the Cardinals threw away a first rounder, you know, drafted Kyler Murray year after drafting Josh Rosen in the first round. Yeah. So that's, teams aren't tied to that, you know, even a first round investment, much less a third. So just again, selfishly, I'd love to see him get the chance, but onwards to the Bengals mock draft. This week, Greg and I both did our own mock drafts through Pro Football Focus's website. I don't know how many people out there actually have subscriptions. You can do a 2-round mock draft for free. You pick a team, you can do trades and all that fun stuff. But we both did full 7-rounders. It's kind of compare and contrast, see the route that we went. We'll pull Greg's up first here. I'm going to put it on the screen if you want to go over a little bit of your thought process here.
So when we did this mock draft, we basically decided actively not to make trades. So we just kind of kept it where the Bengals were at and let the draft play out. So obviously I pulled my homer there with Michael Mayer at 28 for the Bengals first round pick. But when I got to 28, seeing what was left available, it felt like almost a reach no matter where you went. And I know you hit on this last time we had the podcast a couple weeks ago, that the Bengals trading out of 28. After I did multiple mock drafts, and I hate to say this, Joe, but I think you might be right. I mean, I don't like giving credit, but
a lot of people hate to say that I'm right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I have to do that here. I think you might be right. Trading out of 28 seems like a very useful thing to me for the Bengals, picking up an extra pick. And I think if you trade, can somehow find a way to trade back to that 45-50 range, I think you can get the same type of player as Michael Mayer, whether it be one of the other tight ends. And I just drafting him at 28 felt like a reach. And I love Michael Mayer, and I'm a homer. And it still felt like a reach because there were so many tight ends available because it is so deep. So I do have to give you credit, which is just, it burns my soul, but I have to do it. I do think trading out of that first round pick would be nice.
Warms my heart. It warms my heart.
But it's looking at me.
I was going to say,
go ahead. My bad.
To me, I don't even know if it's a reach to get Michael Mayer, because he's going to get picked. I mean, I honestly don't think he's going to be around by the time the Bengals pick. I think Kincaid and Mayer will both be gone, but it's more of just resource allocation. The Bengals only have seven draft picks. It's where, you know, everyone says it's best player available. It's never best player available. The best player available is a quarterback, and you have a quarterback. You're not picking a quarterback. It's priority. It's, you know, it's best fit for, you know, for your priorities. I mean, everyone has a handful of spots where they want to hit. And if that guy, you know, if you can get a guy at, you know, in the first round that the next tier of guys isn't going to be till round three or something like that. And then it's somewhere like tight end, where historically the first round tight ends don't hit any higher. They actually, the value isn't there to draft them the first round over getting them to round three. All the all pros were, you know, Travis Kelce was a third rounder. George Kittle was a second rounder. You know, and these guys are later picks. Mark Andrews was a second rounder.
Yeah. I want to say third, but I could be wrong on that. But
yeah, Hayden Hurst was that. They picked Hayden Hurst in the first round that year.
He was a first rounder. Yep, correct.
So, but yeah, it's, you know, again, it's not a reach so much as it's, you know, I just think the Bengals, where they need, they'll have a better caliber player at that point.
Yeah, I mean, and even looking at last year, you look back at the Ravens last year drafted Isaiah Likely out of Coastal Carolina, and I think it was the sixth, might have been the fifth, but that kid's been pretty useful, I think, for Baltimore as a second tight end. He looked pretty nice to me. So I agree with you. The value drafting tight end in the first round, not always there. I do have the feeling that if Michael Mayer's there, it's either Michael Mayer or trade out. But I think trading out would be probably the best case scenario. So when I got there to 28 in most of my mock drafts, when I really wanted to go with an elite corner or an elite tackle, more so than going with a tight end, it wasn't always doable at 28. For the most part, you were either reaching for a tackle or reaching for a corner. And that's why I think the trading out of the first round to me makes a lot of sense. When you can still get a second round tackle at 45, that's the guy I would have been drafting at 28 if I had to reach for him. So, I went Michael Mayer kind of out of necessity to go somewhere. But I do think it's going to get very interesting.
Definitely. Let's go over I'll pull mine up. We'll go over my first round pick real quick. This guy I don't think is actually going to be there when the Bengals pick. Brian Breesy, defensive interior out of Clemson. This is a spot where they definitely need reinforcements. BJ Hill got worn down as the year went on. DJ Reader, this is the last year of his contract. Now, I wholly expect them to keep DJ Reader around for a little bit longer, but if you can get somebody who can push the pocket from the inside, and he's very athletic, his production doesn't match his ability, or at least didn't at Clemson, but I think that, you know, his physical traits, his, you know, his size, his strength, his quickness, that's someone who you can plug in the rotation absolutely day one. And he's going to give you a lot of push. He's going to give you a handful, 4 or 5 sacks on the season. He's going to, you know, I think he's going to hold up well against the run as your 3 technique. Again, I don't expect that guy's going to be here. I was surprised when he was. I think they have him, PFF has him ranked as the 21st overall. And, you know, he was there at 28. Again, I'll take it. I think that would be a good start with what was around.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I went defensive interior in the second round. I think out of the 10 or 12 mock drafts I did, Breesy was available in one of them. I did go defensive interior in the second round with Benton out of Wisconsin. I think that when you see our two mock drafts, I think you can see that we both kind of feel the emptiness of the same spots. We have to fill the same areas. Yeah. And in my mock draft, with us assuming that we weren't going to make any trades, to me, that led me to the Jonah Williams thing, that we basically had to keep him for these mock drafts. And so I ended up not ever taking a tackle in my mock draft, kind of hoping for the best with Jonah Williams and filling out the rest of the roster there in 2, 3, 4, and then picking up a couple running back options that I actually think were pretty useful. I mean, if with my mock draft, if you pick up Deuce Vaughn and Muhammad Ibrahim in the 5th and the 7th, I would be more than ecstatic about that at the running back position. Taking two guys that late, both played at big time colleges, both were big time performers. Ibrahim in the 7th round has a little bit more injury history, but I would love both of those guys to be added to that running back room. That kind of pairs with the mix, and does he take the pay cut? We'll see. And if we can keep Jonah Williams, get rid of Mixon, and bring in those guys, I would feel really, really good about this draft and fill in the holes that we do have open.
I would love to have Deuce Vaughn. I have major concerns about his size because he's tiny. He's 5'5", 170, somewhere in that range.
He's very small.
Yeah, I forget his exact size. Does not fit the Bengals draft history at all. I mean, the Bengals they draft big running backs, even guys that they draft late in the draft. Trevion Williams is smaller-ish. He's 5'9", but he's still a stocky 210 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, I would love having a smaller guy, just as a, you know, gadget guys, as a, you know, receiving threat. I would be all for them drafting him. I don't see that, again, just looking at history, but that if you can get that guy and then back him up with Ibrahim out of Minnesota in the 7th, I mean, that's, you're feeling dynamic about your running back room. One of the two of those guys are going to be ready to step in day one and, you know, be your lead back if Mixon, Mixon's leaving. I'll pull up mine here again real quickly. It's kind of funny. Yeah. You went tight end, defensive interior. I went defensive interior, tight end, first round, second round. I think Luke Musgrave is, I would love for him to be around his 60s, but you know, that's where you're starting to get the value in your tight ends.
Yeah, totally agree.
After we talked about Drew Sample being a bust of a tight end, you know, but he was there's not as much projection on Luke Musgrave. He's a legitimate pass receiving threat. Good size. He's got really good speed. Get him out of the Pacific Northwest, out of Oregon State. I mean, that's, I really think you plug him in and that offense is that much more dynamic, and you just one more guy to have to, account for running, you know, just running down the seam, and it, you know, if they get that guy, that would be fantastic. The one guy that I thought was weird that where PFF has him ranked is Roschon Johnson out of Texas. He's Robinson's backup at Texas. He really, that's about the only running back in the nation that he would have backed up. He's dynamic. He is a great threat out of the backfield. And again, this Bengals are a passing team. You need someone who is a receiving threat. If any of these running backs don't have a lot of experience catching the ball, then they're not going to see a ton of action. They're going to be a special teamer. Hell, even Chris Evans, who is a fantastic pass catcher, like he can't see the field. I really would love to see that guy in the third round. He's durable enough. He's big enough to be able to carry the ball 25 times. I don't think that they're going to, you know, the only reason that they ran Mixon as much as they did the last couple of years is because of the, I think the financial commitment. You kind of, you know, because his effectiveness just wasn't there. But again, yeah, I only went with the one running back, but I'm assuming that Mixon's probably going to be around. Then you can work on the back of that room next off season and free agency and the draft.
Yeah, I would agree with where your head's at, and I would agree with that guy in the third round. I think a lot of people probably haven't seen him as much as they should have.
Yeah,
I know what I watched him multiple times and was really impressed. The other thing I like about it is the tread on the tires is not insane for coming out of college. In fact, it's probably a plus. You know, when you're going down his sheet and grading him as a player, you know, the less snaps, the better at running back, because you know it's such a ticking time bomb with running backs. You just see how quick they fall off when they get close to that age of 30. The less carries you have in college, the better for me. I mean, you look at a guy like Zeke Elliott, who just carried the ball a ton in college. That stuff does wear on you. I firmly believe that. So the less snaps, the better. I would love to pick up. I would love that pickup if that was, you know, plausible.
Yeah, and I mean, he size wise, he fits what the Bengals do. He's 6 foot, 220 pounds. I mean, that's pretty close to about the same specs that Joe Mixon is. I mean, the Bengals like their bigger backs. They like him sturdier. Again, I'd be fine having a smaller back. The guy that I really like, again, just because of his size, I don't see them getting, is Spears out of Tulane. Watching him, he's dynamic. Again, I saw him in person, you know, against my Bearcats, and he's fun. He's just this little water bug that just kind of jumps around and just makes guys miss. He's got that breakaway speed. Again, keep harping on, you know, Bengals history and, you know, the size of what they go for. I don't think he's likely to be on their, you know, board unless it's late in the draft and he's still sitting around there and, you know, luxury to pick him at the end. But I think he'd be another real fun one. But
he was definitely a guy that I kept my eye on. You know, we had spoke about him previously. Yeah. And in all my mock drafts, he really was a guy that, like, I was looking to potentially draft in my mock drafts, but I just never found that right moment. It just never quite added up. And I kind of feel like that might be exactly how it happens for the Bengals. Like, maybe he is on their board. Maybe he's somebody that they would like to have.
Yeah.
It just doesn't, the puzzle never quite fit together for me. And I feel like they might run into something similar. And I think you have teams around the league that would value that type of back a little bit more, where we would like to get him at this point. Some other teams might not fear drafting him a little bit higher with the size that he has.
Yeah, that was the exact same way. It was, you know, when my spot came up, I was looking, seeing where he was, and there were other running backs that I liked better than him still there, but I went with another spot. And, you know, if he's there around next time, then he'd be, you know, he was gone off the board the next time.
Yep.
A guy that I picked in the fourth round, Chandler, I don't know if it's Zavala, whatever. I don't think he's going to be around in the fourth round. And if he is, someone better be absolutely running a 4.240 to get their ass up to the podium and make that pick.
Yeah.
That's the guy. I mean, he's better than Cordell Volson. Yeah. And if that guy's available basically in the exact same spot where they drafted Cordell Volson, then, you know, that's a home run pick if you can get that. I don't think he's going to be there, but I think it would be a, you know, if he were, I mean, it would be stupid for teams to be passing him up.
Yeah, and he's another guy that I feel like if he was available at that point in the draft, by that point I feel like somebody would have traded up mid-fourth, early fourth. I agree with everything you just said. I feel like somebody would, you know, guard is a position you can draft and kind of plug and play. And he would be one of those guys, in my opinion. And I think there's plenty of teams that, you know, everybody wants offensive line. So if I can get a guy that I can plug and play, usually those day three picks, people, they're not afraid to trade up for day three picks. And it's usually pretty easy. So I definitely would love to see him there. but we'll have to wait and see.
You're going to get yourself into trouble for agreeing with me as much as you have today. I'm a little concerned. That's telling me that I'm probably off in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely both wrong. I mean, we can't agree like this. We're going to have to change things up.
I know.
This will be the only two times in our history.
The only spot that I kind of went totally different. I mean, you picked a wide receiver. I think the Bengals are absolutely going to be looking for a wide receiver. One wasn't there. Tank Dell was there for me at one point, but it was a spot to where I think second round, he was near the top of the board when I picked Musgrave. Tight end is a bigger need than wide receiver right now. Another spot is I went with quarterback. I went with Dorian Thompson-Robinson out of UCLA. Bengals have met with him as one of their top 30 or whatever, you know, whatever the visits are. Clearly there's interest there. They want to upgrade that room. They've tried to bring in a couple of free agents, and right now Jake Browning is the backup. I don't think they're that comfortable with that. They like the guy, but he's kind of at the, you know, you can't project a lot. Like you, as with most, you know, most of the top half of the quarterbacks in the league, when your starter is out, you're screwed, but you want someone that could at least help you help you get through, you know, a 2 or 3 game bridge if need be, and not go 0-3, at least go 1-2, 2-1. I don't think they believe Browning is that guy. So it won't surprise me if they draft a quarterback late on day 3.
And this quarterback was a position that I definitely looked at throughout my drafts. But when I got later in the draft, I just saw picks that I liked a little bit better. But I definitely don't have an issue with the Bengals drafting a quarterback, nor would I be surprised. Like I said, I tried to get a quarterback in my draft. I just never found that. I never found that perfect feel, or either the guy I was looking at got drafted, you know, 10 picks before me, or I felt like I was going to have to reach 20 plus picks to get what I wanted. So it just never meshed for me, but it was still a spot that I was, you know, entertaining. Once I got to that 5th round and beyond, I was entertaining quarterback. Just never made it happen.
Yeah, I was at that point. I'm just kind of looking at the guys on the big board that hit spots where they need, you know, where they're looking, and without, you know, going too far down. Because again, you get to that point, and there's not really any sense in reaching for anybody when you can get a comparable guy as a undrafted free agent, you know. Late in the day, you know, late in the weekend. So, yeah. But yeah, they're definitely going to get a quarterback at some point next weekend, whether it's a late pick or, you know, the undrafted guy. Cause again, they just want more competition back there. Mm-hmm. Anything else of interest in either of yours? Sorry, I'm kind of going through yours or mine. I know you got, Tre'Davious Hodges, Tomlinson. I kept looking at him. Obviously great bloodlines being LaDainian Tomlinson's nephew, correct?
I just knew he was related. I didn't know exactly what it – I knew he was. I just didn't know exactly what it was.
I think it's his nephew. I've looked at him. He's been around constantly. I think they are – I didn't pick a cornerback in mind, but they definitely are going to be looking to add a cornerback.
For me, after I drafted tight end and defensive interior, my mind just went straight to the secondary. Yeah. As a secondary coach, that's the first thing I wanted to shore up. I was like, we've got to get some secondary pieces in here. And the Bengals have done they did a good job with Cam Taylor-Britt in the second round last year. So I think if one of those two were to work out, the third and fourth round, if you're going secondary there, I think you would feel pretty good about taking one of the two working out similar to Cam Taylor-Britt, you know, if they could just find something just for a little bit more depth. So that was me just really wanting to address that issue sooner rather than later in the draft.
And honestly, if one of the top cornerbacks fall to them at 28, and if they're, you know, if they're not looking to trade out, I wouldn't be surprised if they took again, I don't know who's going to be there, Forbes, Banks, like, but I could see them. I mean, they have a long history of drafting first round cornerbacks. They haven't drafted a first-round defensive lineman since Justin Smith in 2001. So I'm out. Wow. that would be bucking a huge trend if they were to get Brian Breesy or Cansey out of Pitt if he were available.
It would not surprise me. I think defensive line and corner are the two spots that I could really see somebody falling to them at 28 that they just have to take them. Where the Bengals might not have been saying, hey, this is our number one priority position that we're going to take early. I think those two spots, somebody good enough might fall to you at 28 that you just say, hey, when we have a chance for a guy like this, we're taking him.
I kind of feel the same way. It's a place where they don't need someone to step in, but there is a need coming down the road. Awuzie is coming off an ACL. All things look to be that he's coming back healthy and he says he'll be ready to go week one, but he's also coming off an injury. I think he's got one more year left on his deal, and you can never have enough good cornerbacks. Same thing with defensive line depth. They have a solid defensive line, but you can never have enough depth, and guys age, you chase and replace. I mean, you add a guy because the next guy's going to be due to be free agent here in the next year or so. So that's, I think there's going to be value there. I wouldn't be surprised. And then after that, I just didn't see a quarterback that really was in my range. But again, I honestly think I'll be shocked if they don't get a cornerback at some point. I picked a safety because he was higher on the board and they could use depth there too, but who knows how it's all going to shake out. Outside of that, any final thoughts on the draft as a whole before we wrap up this segment? Again, we'll be back next week before the draft with a little more, don't have to get all your thoughts out right now and all your projections, but
not necessarily super draft specific, but this just kind of popped up before a little bit ago with the Allen Robinson trade to Pittsburgh. I thought that was really interesting. I mean, the Rams are just offloading anything and everything they can. They traded Allen Robinson to the Steelers, and they're basically swapping seventh round picks, and the Rams are paying $10+ million of his contract, which is just wild to me. But the Steelers, I mean, that's a good trade for the Steelers. They basically get Allen Robinson for free. Not that I think Allen Robinson's that dynamic, but anytime you can add a somewhat useful piece for nothing, why not? And the Rams are paying his salary. So I hate to say it, but good for the Steelers there. That probably worked out in their favor.
Yeah. I mean, they're still paying him $5 million.
Correct.
For ostensibly 400 yards of production this year. He's going to be their wide receiver three. I think they'd be better value to draft somebody. I don't know. I think it's just a weird, it came across, and it was one of those like, Allen, like, what are they getting him for?
Yeah.
Like, they've got Deontay Johnson. They've got George Pickens. Like, they've got their, top end of that room. And I'd almost think it would make more sense to acquire young depth because this is a team that is building. They're not necessarily rebuilding. I mean, they've got a ton of talent there, especially on defense, but getting an older guy who's kind of fallen by the wayside, I don't know how much it fits with the team. I don't know. I thought it was kind of, I agree. Interesting, but a little weird.
Yeah, totally.
You want to do a couple of viewer mail questions?
Let's go viewer mail.
All right. First one. These are all from our friends through patreon.com. On our Slack channel here. First one is from our good buddy, Skylar Webker. This is in all caps with a lot of exclamation. Where's the Higgins deal? Where's the Higgins deal, Greg?
Where's the Higgins deal? I mean, everything you hear is that it's done. It's a, first off, great question because, I'm screaming from the mountaintops. Where is the Higgins deal? I think I go outside my front door every night and say, where's the Higgins deal? But, all of our mothers told us patience was a virtue, whatever that means. I don't know. But evidently, we just have to be patient. I think for me, the only positive that I keep telling myself, okay, they're going to release the Higgins and maybe the Burrow deal. We'll release it all together. I know it's far-fetched, but that's my happy dream. But all signs point to the T. Higgins deal is done. Why it's not signed yet, I don't know, but I do not have any cause for concern. So in no way am I worried or bothered by the fact that we haven't seen it yet. We've seen how the Bengals work. They work with nobody knowing and very quietly, yeah. And they take their time. And then when they move, bam, you hear the news in 5 seconds. So I'm not concerned. I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be a great thing for the Bengals. And I think it's going to kick off a string of really good news for the Bengals in the next couple weeks. That's my hope, and I hope that comes true.
I kind of wonder if it is kind of just tied in with what they're going to do with Mixon and what they're going to do with Jonah. There's a lot of money, and again, I don't know in terms of contract structure if when Penn hits the paper, if everything, like how it has to fit, you know. So if they're just waiting for those to play out, whether they're going to trade Jonah, whether they're going to cut Joe or renegotiate his salary, just to figure out how they, you know, how the money's going to get moved around. So I'm guessing is the wrong, you know. I wouldn't be surprised if there was news on that front by the end of next weekend, after the, you know, after the draft, after the, you know, Jonah will have been decided upon by that point. Mixon, you know, his renegotiation or whatever will be taken care of by next week. So I would think after that, I was kind of hopeful because Monday, you know, team was back for team activities. I was hopeful that there'd be news, but alas, still waiting. It's coming, Skyler.
Yeah, it's coming. And I think, like you said, with Williams and Mixon, I mean, that's a lot of money cap wise that obviously we're not going to be necessarily using on free agents for this year. But like you said, the structure of the deal, if Mixon and Jenna Williams are out of the mix, you can front load and do some different things, and the maneuvering becomes way different. So I'm just hopeful that that's what it is. They're just going to continue to try to put themselves in the best scenario. What scenario is that? Is Williams here? Is Mixon here? And then that affects what T. Higgins' deal looks like. Not necessarily from overall money, but where does that money go? Does it go year one, two, three, so on and so forth, so that they can continue to carry on that team however they see fit?
Yeah, I think that's exactly dead on. It's just waiting on where they're going to put the money. Next question from our favorite friend in the great white north of Canada, Joey Gaditsa. He apparently, it's blizzarding in Regina right now. I just saw a picture that he put, and there's a crap load of snow, and no thanks, man. It's about 80 degrees outside right now, isn't it?
Let's see. My phone's got it. Yes, I got 77 here in Florence, Kentucky today.
I got exactly 80 degrees, Cincinnati, Ohio, and sunny. Yeah, it's, sorry about your weather, Joey. if the Bengals ask Mixon to take a pay cut, will he accept? Do you think he'll accept? And again, we touched on this, and I think he has to.
Exactly. I don't know that he has a choice. I think that Mixon as a man might be like, I don't want to accept this. But when you go talk to your agent, and your agent says, buddy, you have to, because otherwise we're not going to recoup this money. And I know you're seeing as it as a pay cut, but you know, really, I think Mixon should view this as a pay raise. Because if he doesn't, then you're going to be making less money for sure, in my opinion. I just don't see where he's going to get it. So I think it's one of those things that he has to.
Yeah, he's going to make a lot less. And then second part of this question, is he still guaranteed the lead back role? I think if he's back, he's going to start the season as running back one. But I don't think... especially, I mean, he's definitely not going to end the season. Like, they're going to want to get that, you know, get that rookie more and more carries. And if they're effective, which, you know, you hope that, you know, you're scouting and developing, you know, that he's going to be effective, that he's going to get more carries as the season goes on. They'll keep, and when the weather gets colder, I think they're going to, you know, on colder games or, you know, defensive battle games, they'll lean on Mixon more because he's sure handed. But, by the year goes on, I don't think he's going to be running back one, you know, lead back, whatever.
Yeah. I think I would say that basically him being the lead back is almost assuredly the deal if he's here in Cincinnati, I think he will be the lead back to start, barring them drafting Bijan Robinson or something, which I definitely do not see happening. Yeah. But barring something, you know, crazy like that, if he's here, I think he starts as the lead back. Now, I could see a scenario week one where he's the lead back, but the second back has just as many carries and just as many snaps. Yeah. So we can call him the lead back, but so yes, I think he'll be the lead back, but no, I don't think he'll really be a lead back for any significant amount of time. I think it'll be a more of a two running back system, which I'm totally fine with. But he'll be quote unquote on the depth chart as number one, but not necessarily. Well, I see that reflected in snaps, carries, catches, efficiency. I think you'll see more of a two back approach.
I was just going to ask, do you think he's going to end up with more carries, more touches?
Then the next back?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's hard to project because we don't know who that next back is. Right now it's Trevion Williams, but he's definitely, you know, Trevion Williams isn't going to be the number two back. Most likely,
my guess is that he ends up with less carries than the other Bengals running backs combined. Okay. So, and I'll just say that to – because we don't know what they're going to draft yet. We don't know, you know, exactly what's going to happen. But the way I envision it and see it playing out, I think the rest of the running backs for Cincinnati will have more carries, in my opinion, than Joe Mixon will. And I'm not saying it's by a ton, I do think Mixon will end up getting 40% of the carries for the Bengals this year out of the entirety of their carries. I see that 40% number just feels right. Sounds right, and that's how I see it playing out.
I wish they'd use more of their depth. I mean, they've constantly, like, they've only used two running backs no matter how many guys are in that room. I don't know whose Wheaties that Chris Evans pissed in to move down the chart. I mean, he fell behind Trevion Williams, but he's a capable, like, he's got ability. He's got things. His pass-catching ability is better than, frankly, a lot of wide receivers out there. I'd like to see him out, you know, again, you're tipping your hand, but Bengals are going to throw the ball 60% of the time anyway. What does bringing him in mean? It just means that they're going to throw the ball. Trevion Williams was pretty, you know, was a productive back when he was in there. I'd like to see him use more depth, even, you know, with the, you know, draft pick and Joe Mixon, use all of them. There's nothing saying that you can't.
Yeah. You're preaching to the choir here on Chris Evans. Since he came into the league, I never saw anything that made me say, I don't really love him. I like when he's out wide. Yeah. He ran, he made the catch in the corner of the end zone for a touchdown against, I can't remember who it was, but he's had some really nice moments that I thought, okay, now we can kind of start building on this. Yeah. And it just never happened. Yeah. Obviously we're not there for every practice. We don't get to see everything. Maybe, you know, there's things behind doors we don't know about, but from what I've seen, I like Chris Evans, and I agree with you. I wish they would use their depth just to use it. Why not see what you have? I would love to see Chris Evans get a couple more snaps, and Williams for that matter.
A few whispers that I've heard is that he's just struggles with the playbook a little bit, but he's going into year three into the system. So anyway, it'll be cool if they use more of the room. They haven't, but anyway. Next question is from our favorite man from, I think he's Birmingham, Alabama. I know he lives in Alabama. I can't remember. I think Birmingham, James. Correct me if I'm wrong later. What is the boldest move the Bengals could make in the upcoming draft? And I'll preface that. We'll say within reason. I mean, boldest move is move up the trade, you know, move up to pick one and pick, you know, Bryce Young or CJ Stroud or something. But we'll say within reason, what do you think is a bold move? Like, if, you know,
I tried to rack my brain and really come up with what would be the boldest move. And for me, the thing that just kept popping into my mind, and no way am I saying I want this to happen, but I think the boldest thing the Bengals could do would be to potentially trade up and draft Bijan Robinson. I don't want it to happen, but I do think that would be the boldest thing the Bengals would do in this draft. For me, that move would be it. Maybe that's Jonah Williams getting traded part of that. Not sure, but I think for me, the Bengals, the boldest thing they can do would be Bijan Robinson somewhere in that 10 to 20 range.
That's exactly where I was, the exact same path I was heading on, was drafting him at some point. Again, I don't place a high value on running backs. He's after Saquon Barkley, he's one of the high, you know, I don't say generational, but one of the highest running back prospects, but you can find running backs, whatever, but it would be a bold move. I mean, that's them finding the guy that they want going and getting it, which they rarely do. Usually they let the board fall to them. So that would be a bold move.
And if Bijan Robinson works out to be that back, like let's say the Bengals made this bold move and said, we're going to go get Bijan Robinson because we think he's a can't miss guy. We think he's the next Saquon Barkley, Austin Eckler. Like we think he's a all pro all the time. If they did that and it worked out, my goodness. I mean, the Bengals offense, if you put, of course, we're assuming Bijan Robinson is that guy, which, you know, all signs point to he will be. But if that did work out, my gosh, you give Joe Burrow, at least for this year, Bijan Robinson, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, Jamar Chase, and Irv Smith Jr.
Good night.
And let's say Jonah Williams and Orlando Brown are your tackles.
Good night.
There's a reason Vegas put Joe Burrow as the favorite to win the MVP this year. I mean, that would be ridiculous. That would be a tough offense to stop.
Yeah, I mean, that's 35 points a game is what that is. Two more questions, but they're kind of tied in, kind of go hand in hand. First is from Andrew Moore. I'm going to need a tail-of-the-tape breakdown of the Bengals switching their official chili from Gold Star to Skyline. And then another one is Nathan Connor, thoughts on the new partnership with Skyline. What are your thoughts? Yeah, I mean, you're local Cincinnati, and what are your thoughts on between the two of them for Cincinnati chili? For those of you that aren't aware, Bengals ended their partnership with Gold Star, and they've started a new sponsorship with Skyline. I guarantee Skyline's bigger and can pay them more money. They need more money to pay everybody, but...
This is the most no-brainer question. This is a great question. As a Cincinnati area guy, the Bengals in, you know, previous to the last couple years, a lot of decisions the Bengals have made have, you know, not worked out or been very questionable or downright horrible. This is one we're gonna put our grade right here for Skyline. Let me get, it's an A-plus move. That is an A-plus move. Skyline is tremendously better than Gold Star. Tremendously better. You can go to Skyline. You get the little Cholito with the little sour cream. Phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Those are good.
They're unbelievable. You at certain Skylines, you have the funnel cake fries. That is a very missed portion of the meal, I think, for a lot of people at Skyline. When you try those funnel cake fries, it's life-changing, okay? And, you know, so to me, this is a no-brainer. Skyline's cleaner. The food's better. I vote Skyline hands down. No question about it. And talking about some Skyline Gold Star news, I saw a hack the other day that I've never done at Skyline, and I have to try it at some point. And that is you get the three-way, but you put the cheese underneath of the chili.
I saw that.
This blew my mind.
Yeah.
I had never thought about it. And it makes so much sense because you lose a lot of cheese off the top when you go in for bites, you know, one, two, and three.
Yeah.
Those early bites are key. So I really thought the chili over the cheese, that could be a game changer too.
Yeah.
Bengals front, Skyline, phenomenal, A+. They did a fantastic job. New partners of the Bengals will take it.
I don't think anyone in the Bengals front office honestly gives a shit about what, you know, what tastes the best. It's just who's going to give them more money. Full disclosure, I have lifelong been more of a Gold Star fan than Skyline.
Really?
My wife doesn't like Skyline at all. However, we are going to Skyline for dinner tonight after we record.
Yes.
It is my daughter's birthday tomorrow. She turns 8 years old tomorrow. It'll be today.
Nice.
There's Ellie for all those. Gabrielle Rose. Happy birthday to her. She likes Gold Star, she likes Skyline better. And tomorrow we're busy. I've got baseball with my oldest. So her birthday dinner a day early, she wanted to go to Skyline. So
it's a good pick.
We may have to do the hack while we go there.
And tell her I said happy birthday.
Absolutely. Well, she's everyone in the world knows it's her birthday because she won't stop letting us hear about it. I think she thinks she's the only person in the world with a birthday of April 20th. I won't break it. I won't break her heart and tell her historical figures who've had that birthday, because that's not cool.
Yeah. But, you know, we're all worried about our birthdays till you reach a certain age. Once you get past 21, you start hitting it, those higher numbers.
Yeah.
Your birthday comes up and you're just like, I do not care.
Yeah.
So good for her. She's still got some years where those birthdays you get really happy about. So I wish I could be a kid again and be excited about certain things. But now a birthday shows up and I'm like, we're here again. I'm older again. So good
for her. The worst part is when kids talk, like my kids talk about things from my childhood being last century. And they're not wrong.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, that's a hurtful statement, though. When somebody says that.
Yeah.
That hurts. Yeah. It hurts down deep, you know?
Yeah, back last century when you were a kid. I'm like, God, at least you guys.
At least they're not saying last millennium, because that is also a, they could have done that. Don't give them that information.
Yeah, my son is in eighth grade. He is about the biggest smartass. Unfortunately, he comes by it naturally. Clearly, I'm sarcastic. My wife has a very sharp, sarcastic wit, and he's following along in the family business. He makes plenty of comments to that effect, so. Anyway. We've run long. We always run long. It's cool. It's always fun talking to you. You got any parting thoughts, parting shots before we hit the bricks for the day?
Parting with some Cincinnati news. The Reds signed an extension with Hunter Green that I think bought out basically two of his arbitration years. I mean, it was all of them.
Yeah, team option, or his first year of free agency and team option for his second year of free agency.
Okay. To me, I like the move. The Reds did something, you know, that's good. But I don't feel fantastic about it, because I really, you know, when I look at the Reds, I think Graham Ashcraft and Lodolo before I think Hunter Green. I know he was the second overall pick and he's supposed to be the guy, but
yeah.
I like the other two a little bit better. But anytime the Reds are spending money, we'll take it. So
yeah, that doesn't happen often. I think, and I said that to someone earlier today, I think them signing Hunter Green, I think, is more about optics, because he's a face of the franchise guy. Extremely, extremely well-spoken, composed, good-looking guy, a guy that, you know, you can put out in front of your advertising and everything. Again, he's got the pedigree. I mean, he was on Sports Illustrated as a, you know, as a kid. Yeah, I have no problem with them signing him, and I honestly I think one of the other starters will get extended too, because when the Reds do extend, when they rarely times they spend money, they actually extend in bunches. They've done that with they did Votto's huge extension, and then a month later they did Brandon Phillips' ill-fated extension. Yeah. So it's good to see, but this is coming
hopefully up. Hopefully it kicks off some good. A string of good Reds news as well.
Signings, and after that was announced, they lost 10-0 on Tuesday and they lost 8-0 today. So tempered enthusiasm. Yes. Anyway, you guys can find us at Twitter. You can say at trbengalshow.com. We're on TikTok. If you guys haven't TikTok, I don't know what TikTok is.
I don't know what TikTok is.
Yeah. TikTok, while it's still a thing. Questions, email us to team@riverfrontcincy.com. Outside of that, you guys have a great week. We will talk to everybody next week. It will be just about time for the draft when we talk to you guys next. Take care.